TalkZone.com. Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Nolan Naraki, it is our pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from around the NFL. This week it's all about the NFL college draft, and from Cam Newton at the top of the draft to Mr. Irrelevant at the bottom, you'll get it all right here, coming up next on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
With the first pick in the 2011 NFL draft, the Carolina Panthers select Cam Newton, quarterback, Auburn. With the second pick in the 2011 NFL draft, the Denver Broncos select Von Miller, linebacker, Texas A&M.
And on they rolled. Hello, everyone. I'm Hub Arkish from Pro Football Weekly, and I'm joined by our senior editor and draft expert, Nolan Naraki, the author of the Pro Football Weekly Draft Preview book, as well as our Draft Preview Guide magazine. And the 76th annual NFL college draft is either in the books or almost in the books, depending on what day of this weekend you are listening. And we here at Pro Football Weekly are going to take a pass for just an hour on all the labor impasse, all the issues, all the ifs, all the questions, and of course it did impact this draft as well. But let's focus on that oasis we find every spring as every team suddenly has a chance to get better. And I will welcome in Nolan. Nolan, I think, just focus on the first round. We just don't have the time, unfortunately, to start doing analysis of all 32 teams' drafts. And the first round is where a lot of the excitement is. And you heard the announcement, Cam Newton, number one, Von Miller, number two. A lot of the boos directed towards that Cam Newton pick because of the controversy surrounded it, but boos were kind of the theme of at least the first round. Most of them directed at Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL. So the one quick question before we get to the actual picks, having talked to all 32 teams at this point, what is your reaction to what, if any, impact the labor impasse may have had on this draft?
I think teams were somewhat disappointed that they couldn't strike deals for veterans. You got a lot of quarterbacks out there like Carson Palmer, who's been disgruntled. You got Donovan McNabb. You got Kevin Cobb in Philadelphia. I think all three of those guys could have had an impact beforehand had they been able to move the players. So I think teams had a little bit more uncertainty than they're used to. And, if they had been another teams, we could have seen a different top 12, where maybe there weren't 12 quarterbacks taken so early.
And of course, what was really strange is then on Friday, prior to the second or third round, the league goes and changes the rules. So I'm sure they would argue that couldn't have been avoided all due to the judges' decisions and stays requested for lockouts to be lifted. The reality is that the league did know before the first round Thursday night that the injunction had been put in place, and they could have done something about it. But again, we'll talk about the labor impasse, unfortunately, next week, and I'm sure for at least a couple of weeks after that. Cam Newton, such a lightning rod. And the focus of this draft, I know I, for one, am still stunned and disappointed that the Carolina Panthers, with that valuable an asset, would take that kind of risk. And yet they have, and Nolan, there's no argument that if the kids, can be grown up, if the head gets on straight physically, he is probably worthy of that kind of risk.
Yeah, he has all the talent in the world, Hub. The big question all along is whether he's got the humility to deal with an NFL locker room, to lead. You got to have the vulnerability to earn the trust of your teammates, and he just has never shown it. He's a guy that's got leadership issues, and I think that was the biggest concern that the Panthers spent a lot of time trying to work through. I think they did spend an enormous amount of time agonizing through the decision, trying to make sure that they weren't missing it. And at the end of the day, it was just the talent was too great for them to pass.
And then you go from, I think clearly the most controversial pick in this draft and maybe of the last few, to the surest thing. Anybody who spent 2 minutes with Von Miller has to know that this kid is everything you would want in your locker room, off the field, and on the football field, a unique talent. And yet a lot of people had pigeonholed him as an outside rushbacker in a 3-4. That probably is his best spot. And he's going to go to Denver, where we have to assume that John Fox is going to stick with the 4-3 that he preferred in Carolina, or inheriting a team that was playing 3-4, at least that he might eventually try and transition back to the defense he likes the best.
he's definitely planning to move to the 4-3, and what they're going to try to do with him is stand him up and let him play Sam linebacker on first and second down, and he's a guy they'll find unique ways to rush on third down. You know, he's got all the pass rush ability in the world. He was the only impact outside linebacker in this draft. And I think the Denver Broncos did a good job of recognizing the depth of the draft and moving away from the defensive tackle and selecting Miller.
You know, it seems like it got pretty easy after that with the next three picks because Marcell Dareus, you know, maybe one of the two best players in the draft, one of the three best. A.J. Green fit at 4. Patrick Peterson, a real value at 5, if you can have such a thing. So I guess, other than the fact that the Cardinals passed the quarterback, not a lot of questions about Dareus Green and Peterson coming off 2, 3, 4 in that order?
No, I think that the key reason that the Cardinals did pass is because there's a good chance Kevin Cobb will wind up in Arizona. I think they'd like to get a veteran quarterback that they could win with right away, and that was the logic behind going with the cornerback.
Now, Nolan, I was really disturbed by what the Cleveland Browns did. We all knew for 3-4 days leading up to the draft that number 6 pick was the one that might be the most in play early, that that's where somebody would come up, and that Julio Jones would likely be the player that it was used on. But when the Atlanta Falcons jumped up, and basically, now they did give up their 1 and their 4 next year. I know those are valuable assets, but you have to assume the Falcons are contenders, so that's going to be a 1 that is almost like a high 2. And then what they gave up this year, the 27th pick, the 59th pick, the 124th pick, you know, the Cleveland Browns ended up moving that 27th to get back up to 21 and gave up their third round pick this year to get Phil Taylor. I just don't think the Cleveland Browns are a good enough football team to give up those kind of assets for what they got.
I think they felt like they had so many needs that they needed to wind up selecting a good number of players, and that's the whole reason behind their intention to move down. I think on the flip side, the Falcons were looking for an impact player. They went back and looked at why they couldn't win it in the playoffs, and one of the big reasons is they just don't have the weapons for Matt Ryan to, you know, it's opposite Roddy White. They need more talent on that offense. They got to better support him. So they felt like they needed one of the two elite playmakers. A.J. Green was the guy that they really wanted and coveted, but they couldn't find a way to get up to number 4, so they settled with Julio Jones at 6.
All right, Nolan, let's take a very quick commercial break here. We'll be back with more breaking down the NFL college draft, specifically the first round, in just a moment. Welcome back. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor at PFW, and we are joined this week by our senior editor and NFL draft expert, Nolan Naraki, and we're taking a look at the 76th annual NFL college draft. Nolan, we've already talked about picks 1 through 6. At number 7, San Francisco 49ers surprised me. Now, Aldon Smith is a player who I love. I think it's a great pick. I'm not sure that you had to use the 7th pick overall in the draft to get him. And for a team that seemed to have such a crying need at quarterback with Blaine Gabbert still on the board, this one caught me off guard a little bit.
Yeah, I think the 49ers did an excellent job of selling the smokescreen that they did want a quarterback. I think they had the entire league believing that that was the direction they're going. The defense is what I think they're trying to really establish there, and that the two positions that they really needed were the cornerback and outside linebacker. And Aldon Smith is a guy that I think they may have been able to get a little bit lower down had they been able to trade the pick, but once the time came on the clock, there were no takers. They stayed put, and they just went with the best pass rusher.
Now, to me, that was maybe the third biggest surprise of the first round. The second biggest surprise came with the next pick. The Tennessee Titans left Gabbert on the board and selected Jake Locker at number 8.
Yeah, I think it did surprise a lot of people. You look at the intangibles of Jake Locker, and they were as strong as any quarterback in this year's draft, and I think that's what really comforted the Tennessee Titans decision makers. The other part that I think they were really looking at was the fits. You look back at Chris Palmer's offense, the time he's been most successful in the past is when he was in Jacksonville with Tom Coughlin, and he had a similar quarterback from Washington named Mark Brunell. So I think when you look at the fit, it made a lot of sense to plug in Jake Locker at that pick.
No, and Tyron Smith at number 9, the big left tackle out of USC to the Cowboys, you know, clearly is a need pick, not the 9th best player in the draft. And what really interested me is not the number 1 offensive tackle on a lot of boards. Is this Jerry Jones being more involved than he should be again, or is this maybe a better pick than I'm giving him credit for?
I think the athletic ability is clearly there. Nobody questioned the talent. The big question about him was how he put on 25 pounds in 3 months' time. And there were teams that had big concerns about his knee. that the injury concerns were there. So there were a number of concerns, but I think everybody knew which way that the Cowboys were going to go. I think they clearly got to improve their protection and try to keep Tony Romo healthy. And, you know, for the first time, I think they filled a big pressing need on that offensive line.
Well, and another shocker at number 10, how lucky could Mike Shanahan be to have Blaine Gabbert, the quarterback he so desperately might need and covet, sitting there, and they turn around and trade the pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and my hat is off to the Jaguars. All they gave up was the 16th pick in the first round, and they're number 2, and the Jags come up at number 10 and get the kid that I thought was the best quarterback on the board in this draft.
Yeah, I think it's another case of teams playing great smokescreens and the rest of the league. I think the guy that the Washington Redskins really coveted was Christian Ponder. He was a better fit for their offense. You know, the Vikings were able to sneak him out 2 picks later, but that was the guy that they really wanted, and they expected to be able to get him a little bit later in the draft. You know, they were looking at outside linebacker. Alden Smith was a guy that could have came off the board here, and, you know, they were able to address that glaring hole.
All right, and at number 11, pretty much what everybody had identified, J.J. Watt, the Houston Texans, as close to a sure thing as you're going to find in terms of effort, character, off the field. There will be no issues there. A kid that was very productive at Wisconsin. And, well, what would the draft be if the Houston Texans didn't draft a defensive lineman in the first round?
Yeah, I think you look at the 3-4 defense that they're running, you want to have those 2 solid fence post defensive ends, and they're definitely going to have them now with Mario Williams and J.J. Watt, two of the best in the league, I think, in due time. You know, they're both big physical players, and I think the Texans will be set for years to come.
All right, now I called Alden Smith and Jake Locker the third and second biggest surprises in the draft. To me, at number 12, Christian Ponder to the Vikings. I think he just gave us the explanation that they apparently felt that he wouldn't get past the Skins at 16. But there's no way that this kid should have been the 12th pick in the draft or the 16th pick in the draft.
Yeah, I think the way the Vikings were looking at it, and even the Redskins, they felt very good about his intangibles. He's a very smart kid, hardworking, and you know exactly what you're getting. I think they were looking at him as a Mark Sanchez type of quarterback that would be a great fit in a West Coast offense. You know, the big concern to me was the decision making. I think he regressed as a senior, and I think he's been very snake bitten by injuries. I think that elbow is going to be a concern in the NFL. I don't see him staying healthy for a full 16-game season, and I think that's going to be a problem throughout his NFL career.
Well, Nolan, every year in the draft, there's one player who's top 3, top 5, top 7, and inexplicably starts to slip. And this year, to me, it's got to be Nick Fairley. I don't think there's any team in the draft that improved themselves more in the first round than the Detroit Lions, finding Fairley at 13 and envisioning the next 5 to 10 years with him outside and Ndamukong Suh inside.
Yeah, he's a very disruptive inside rusher, and you put those two guys together, I think you're going to have a havoc-wreaking tandem in the middle that's very difficult to block. Talent-wise, there's no question he belonged up here. The big question teams had was about the makeup, the maturity. And I think Jim Schwartz felt more comfortable. He's dealt with guys like Fairley in the past with Albert Haynesworth in Tennessee. And I think he feels like he can manage him and allow him enough rest to get the most out of his talent.
St. Louis Rams with Robert Quinn at 14. Every year there's a player who reminds me of the famous Mike Mamula from the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, Quinn's a guy who may be an all-world prospect, but really just hasn't done it on the field. Didn't even play his last year at North Carolina. Is this a reach, or does this pick make sense to you?
I think the speed definitely makes sense when you look at his ability to come off the edge. That's what the Rams really needed. You look at James Hall and how old he is on the outside. They definitely needed to get younger on that defensive line. You know, there are concerns about his toughness against the run, and a number of teams had him off their boards for the benign brain tumor that is still in his head. But at 14, I think there was enough value there for an edge rusher to take. Make that pick.
All right, Nolan, we're going to take a breath here. We're going to get a little break in, quick commercial. We've got lots more to go as we work through the first round of the 76th NFL College Draft. We've got more of this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly for you. Thank you so much for listening. Hub Arkish and Nolan Naraki taking you through the first round of the NFL College Draft. And we've touched on picks 1 through 14. At 15, Nolan, the Miami Dolphins jump up and grab Offensive guard slash center Mike Pouncey, his identical twin Marquise, was a rookie Pro Bowler last year for the Pittsburgh Steelers at center. Mike stayed another year at Florida to play center after playing guard next to his brother. Wants to be a center. Some question as to what his best position is. It probably is guard. And the Miami Dolphins, with tremendous need at running back and maybe even a need at quarterback, take a center guard. Kind of an interesting pick this high in the first round.
Yeah, I think teams felt comfortable with what they were getting with the last name, the pedigree, but you look at the tape, and I don't think Mike was nearly as polished as his brother Marquise. He's definitely going to fill a big void on that offensive line. I think you got an former offensive line coach, Tony Sperano, who now serves as the head coach. I think he really understands the importance of the offensive line, and it made a lot of sense from that standpoint.
Now, Nolan, at 16, the Washington Redskins with Ryan Kerrigan, a kid who I love, who I think is going to be a very productive NFL player. He's probably going to play a lot of years. I don't really know if I see the star power there. And again, I go back to the trade. In essence, what they did here was trade, you know, Blaine Gabbert for Ryan Kerrigan and an extra second round pick in the middle of the second round. I really question the Redskins' wisdom and what they ended up with here.
Yeah, I think they were targeting the outside linebacker position as a key area of need. And Aldon Smith was a guy that they were looking hard at. And obviously he wasn't there. He came off of the board early. So I think they had to go with Kerrigan at the spot.
Nobody works the NFL draft better than Bill Belichick. He was busy again yesterday, and he had the 17th pick he had acquired from the Raiders 2 years ago for Richard Seymour. Nate Solder of Colorado is the second offensive tackle off the board. And it's funny because I look at him and the first thing I think is, wow, that's the same prospect as Sebastian Vollmer. You know, he may have his bookends now for the next 6-8 years.
Yeah, he's a very smart kid, has a lot of developmental potential. I think they were looking to find a left tackle of the future and felt comfortable that they can get the most out of him with a very veteran offensive line coach in Dante Scarnecchia. So he's a guy that I had concerns about. I think he's a little bit too tall. I'm not sure he's got great anchor strength, and I think it's going to take him some time in the NFL to get acclimated to the game after only 3 years at the position. But he's a guy that's got a ton of upside, and they got a coaching staff there that's going to get the most out of him.
Well, and we know that they still hope, we believe, to re-sign Matt Light for a year or two. When they brought Vollmer in the second round, he was forced into the lineup due to injuries at left tackle, but eventually moved to right tackle. So I assume they view this as a kid that they've got the year or two to invest in as long as they can get Light signed.
Yeah, I think there's a chance they do move on from Light, and I think that's the bigger reason why they wanted to fill this need at this spot. So either way, I think they'll be set for the future.
You know, kid I know you liked a lot at 18, Corey Leggett, is really nice value at 18, and the San Diego Chargers and their 3-4 scheme, he could be the perfect fit for it. I'm guessing this is a pick you feel somewhat good about.
Yeah, I think they really needed to address their five technique position and bolster that defensive line. And he's a guy that can play anywhere along the front. I think he would have been very good inside in a 4-3 defense, but he's got enough strength and movement skill to be very effective in the 30 as well.
New York Giants may have stumbled into that perfect storm where certainly the secondary cornerback, one of their greatest needs, they would have liked to address the offensive line and running back as well. But I don't think most boards saw Prince Amukamara lasting this long. He's there at 19 for the Giants, certainly the second-best cornerback in the draft, and seems to be a really nice fit there.
Yeah, I think they had a pressing need on that defense. They wanted to get better. You know, they were looking more at the offensive line and in the backfield, but once Prince fell to the spot, they saw too much value. I think a lot of teams expressed concerns about Prince in the interview process. He's got a little bit of a quirky personality, considered to be too nice, and, you know, talked about his favorite movie being a sappy romance novel. So teams questioned his mental toughness a little bit. I think that is the reason why he slid this far in the draft, and I think the Giants wound up with a solid value at this pick.
I love when stuff like that happens in the draft. And folks, believe it or not, it happens more often than you know in every year. This kid's a first-round draft choice, but we might skip him for a few picks because he likes sappy romance novels. Hey, you know, good football players usually stay good football players. We'll keep an eye on Amukamara as he develops with the New York Giants. We're also keeping an eye on the clock as we take a very quick commercial break here. A few commercial messages, and then Nolan and I are back to continue to work our way through the first round of the 76th annual NFL College Draft. Yes, we are. And, of course, this weekend, as I said at the top, we're taking a break. We're taking a breather from all the NFL's labor troubles. Yeah, they still exist, and it was a very active week leading up to the NFL draft. But the story this weekend was football. It was young football players. It was the NFL college draft. And the first round, if not necessarily the most important, always the most exciting. We've talked about picks 1 through 19, and we talked just prior to the break about Prince Amukamara going to the New York Giants. I think on everybody's board, the second-best cornerback behind Patrick Peterson. And it interests me that sitting right there at 20, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, now based on their 10-6 season last year, Nolan, you could argue that the defensive line, or at least the front seven and pass pressure, was their greatest need. They end up selecting Adrian Claiborne out of Iowa in that spot. Good football player who also fills a need. But I have to wonder, with the legal problems of Aqib Talib, would they have probably liked to have seen Amukamara last one more pick and at least had the option?
Yeah, it's a valid question, but I don't think Talib's going anywhere. I think he's going to be there for a number of years, and I think they definitely did want to address that defensive line, you know, especially at the end position. I don't think they've been able to create enough of a pass rush, and with Claiborne, I think they got a guy who could be a solid rush end. He's got good power, and I think they feel comfortable with what they were getting.
You know, it's interesting as we sit here and look in from the inside, and I know, you know, what your sources are telling you is the same thing I'm hearing. They're committed to Talib, and he's an excellent football player. He's got 15 picks in his first 3 years in the league. He's probably got Pro Bowl potential, but he's also facing some pretty serious charges down there in Texas. And this is a kid who has found trouble everywhere he's gone. And you have to hope, A, that he and the team don't suffer terribly from this, assuming that he's not terribly guilty of something, and B, that he stops finding this kind of trouble. And so it is a risk. You know, I understand the football decision would be to want to stick with Aqib Talib, and you just wonder, you know, how they're going to be able to get control of this kid off the field.
Yeah, you never know how the legal process is going to shake out, and I think there has to be some concern that they may not be able to have him in place a year from now. But, you know, it's a tricky situation trying to match the talent on the board to your needs, and I think they felt like there was enough value here to justify that pick.
Now, here's where it got real interesting to me at number 21. I've already, you know, opined at the top that I don't understand what the Cleveland Browns did trading that sixth pick, at least for what they got. Now they turn around, they're sitting there at 27 with Atlanta's pick, and they give up a third round pick this year to deal with Kansas City and come back up to get defensive tackle Phil Taylor. Obviously, they think the world of Phil Taylor. Is he worthy of that value? And again, I just question the way that, you know, Mike Holmgren in just his second draft with the Browns used his assets.
Yeah, I think when you look at that first trade to be able to land a first-round pick next year, I think there was a fair amount of value in that trade. But, you know, they had to come up at this spot. I think Phil Taylor was a guy that Scott Pioli had targeted, much like he had taken Vince Wilfork when he was in New England in the years past. And they just had a glaring need on the defensive line after they cut Sean Rogers. So I think they felt like they had a replacement for him here in Phil Taylor. I have a lot of concerns about his makeup. I think he's been an underachiever throughout college, and his play didn't match his talent. So he's a guy that they're going to have to get the most out of. I think Dick Duran's a very good coach, and he's the type of guy you want prodding him and putting him in line.
Nolan, sitting at number 22, the Indianapolis Colts, Bill Polian never tells the media anything about anything. And the fact that he was so willing to talk about his fondness for some of these second-tier quarterback prospects in this draft, specifically Colin Kaepernick and Andy Dalton and Christian Ponder, it really had people scratching their heads. He wouldn't really use a first-round pick on a quarterback when he had Peyton Manning, would he? We know Manning is a free agent. He's got a franchise tag on him. And everybody says, gotta be a smokescreen. Now, you know, I think the truth is that much like the Packers took Aaron Rodgers when Brett Favre was still in his prime, Favre was 36, Manning's 35. It is time to find a quarterback, but not in the first round, and such a crying need at left tackle. And to have the best in the draft on many people's boards, Anthony Costanzo sitting there at 22, this could be a classic example of the greatest value meeting the greatest need.
I think it was definitely a big need. Their offensive line has been a problem the last couple of years. I think they got to do a better job of protecting Peyton Manning, and Bill Polian clearly knew it. Roger Saffold's a guy that they had looked at last year and decided to pass, and with an offensive tackle on the board this year, like Anthony Costanzo, a very smart, versatile technician, I think they felt very good about the pick.
Nolan, Peyton Manning had a quarterback rating of 91-plus this year, a little below 92. Pro Bowl season, by some quarterback standards, the lowest rating he's had in the last 8 years. In your mind, is it the first signs that maybe there's a little slippage there, or is it just the deterioration of the offensive line and all the problems they had at wide receiver this year?
I think if you look at it, you could say that Peyton may have had his finest year ever last year, given all the problems around him. I think that offensive line was very weak. I think the receivers were hurt, and, you know, Dallas Clark went down. The running game wasn't there. So when crunch time came and the game was on the line and you had to make plays to get over the hump, I think Peyton made them consistently week in and week out. He was very good in crunch time, and, you know, he did more with less this year than ever before.
All right, guys, we've got 10 more picks to roll through in the first round. We're going to get them all for you, but we do have to take another very brief commercial break here. More Pro Football Weekly coming up in just a moment. Hub Arkish and Nolan Naraki taking you through the first round of the NFL College Draft this weekend. We've talked about picks 1 through 22. And Nolan, particularly as we've gotten down here in the late teens and the high 20s, there's a trend I'm noticing, and I think this gets back to the labor impasse. No free agency to this point as the first round is going on. No ability to address needs. It seems to me throughout this draft, but particularly in the second half of the first round, there was more need drafting going on than what we might normally prefer to see.
Yeah, I think teams definitely need to address the offensive and defensive lines. It's one of the most valuable positions in free agency. And without the ability to do that, they definitely were looking harder at those positions. Danny Watkins is a guy that a lot of teams had pegged as more of an early second rounder, late first, and he's a guy that I think the Eagles felt comfortable reaching at the 23rd pick, knowing that he could be a solid starter in the league and knowing that Howard Mudd is there to develop him.
Yeah, you know, and certainly a big need for the Eagles, understandable. Their other great need in the secondary, but with both Peterson and Amakimari off the board, the only surefire things at cornerback, you know, no question that it's probably a good pick. He's probably going to play for him, but it's where a lot of the first-round sizzle just seemed to disappear. And then at 24, the New Orleans Saints come up. Everybody says, wow, you know, they probably would like a running back. Yeah, you know, Pierre Thomas, you know, apparently is got the contract, or, you know, it's going to happen. You know, they're set there. They've got Reggie Bush to deal with. Bush has shown a willingness to redo his deal. Again, a lot of this being held up by the labor impasse. But, you know, still we know where they were at with running backs last year as they went through, I believe, 11 of them at one point with all the injuries. And Mark Ingram sitting there, a Heisman Trophy winner. Everybody thought slam dunk going to happen. And they go get the pass rusher in Cameron Jordan.
Yeah, I think they definitely were looking hard at their defensive line, and, you know, they'd hoped a player like Phil Taylor would have fallen to them. Even Adrian Claiborne or Ryan Kerrigan, they had a number of other targets on that defensive line, and to have Cameron Jordan fall to them, I think they felt good about it. You got Alex Brown, who I think is nearing the end of his career at left defensive end, and I think they know that they'll be able to plug in Jordan and have an impact player with a great future ahead of him.
All right, now, at this point, you've got the Seattle Seahawks coming up. There had been rumors going back to February that they might have even offered this pick to the Philadelphia Eagles for Kevin Kolb. It didn't happen. As much as Christian Ponder went very high at number 12, that's still only four. People would not have been surprised if a fifth or sixth quarterback had come off the board in the first round. And the Seattle Seahawks say, no, we got to address the offensive line. And they go get James Carpenter, who is a nice football player. But again, I'm not sure everybody had him going this high.
No, I think the look of surprise on Nick Saban's face in New York when his name was announced said it all. You know, I don't think anybody expected Carpenter to go before Mark Ingram, and I thought it caught a lot of people off guard. You know, he's been in play in Seattle. I think they were looking at the quarterback situation as well. Andy Dalton was a guy that they had coveted, but I think he's a guy that teams are going to be looking at very closely in the second round.
You know, in Seattle, all the player movement, and Pete Carroll came in and shook that thing up, and yes, you know, he did get them to the playoffs in his first year, and albeit as a sub-500 team, then pulled the big upset of the New Orleans Saints, and then yet I look for some consistency in the decisions that are being made there and the way that roster is being built, and then I see a pick like this, and you wonder if it isn't a case of a head coach just having a little too much power and maybe needing to rely a little bit more on personnel experts making personnel decisions.
Yeah, I think if you look at that, all the movement on the transaction wire last year, you know, they constantly made changes. I think they may have set the record for transactions in a season. And, you know, just as the indications that the decision-making has been very wishy-washy. And to me, this decision shows the same trend. I think they wanted to address the offensive and defensive lines, and you know they clearly reached here to address it.
Now, at 26, things got very strange all of a sudden because it should have been the Baltimore Ravens. They end up, we'll talk about them in a minute or two, getting the player that we believe they coveted anyway, but they end up passing, and we have to assume that's because they were doing everything they could to get a trade done. The Kansas City Chiefs had traded down from 21 to 27, got the opportunity to jump in front of the Baltimore Ravens, and went out and got Jonathan Baldwin, the big possession receiver out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, what happened on the clock, Hub, was the Bears were trying to move up. You know, they had coveted Gabe Creamy from Wisconsin, and they tried to make the trade. Baltimore signed off on it. They had the pick. Jimmy Smith, they were ready to submit it, and all they needed was final approval from the league. They needed the Bears to sign off on it, and there was panic in the room in terms of how to execute that trade. You know, there's a lot of turnover in the front office in Chicago last season, and I think the Bears clearly made a mistake. You saw Joe Buster in New York cussing out the Bears for not knowing the rules, and it's just a situation that I think reflected very poorly on the Bears.
All right, Nolan, we take one more commercial break here. We're going to wrap up the first round in just a moment. We've got more coming up for you on Pro Football Weekly. We are back on Pro Football Weekly to wrap up the first round of the NFL College Draft. At this point, everybody's a winner because they've either got trade value or a new first-round pick, and nobody's gone on the field and played well or played badly. So everybody's excited. It's one of the things you'll love about the NFL Draft. Now, we just talked about all of the confusion at 26, 27, 28 as the Chicago Bears were trying to move from 29 to 26, apparently to draft the kid they got at 29 anyway, but it caused the Baltimore Ravens to pass. We felt all along that Jimmy Smith, the cornerback from Colorado, was the kid that they wanted, Nolan. Now, they would have picked up an extra draft pick somewhere in the middle of the draft to boot. They didn't get that, but they do get the cornerback that they coveted.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of concerns about Jimmy Smith's character. You know, he failed some positive tests in the past at Colorado. I think the one thing that's different in Baltimore is you got a locker room with Ed Reed, you got Ray Lewis there. I think they feel very comfortable with their ability to manage Jimmy Smith and keep him in line. So, you know, he had a lot of talent. He had clear first-round traits, and he's a guy that I think if Baltimore can manage him, could be a solid player.
Now, you get to 28, which is the Patriots' own pick. Everybody's wondering, wait a minute, Bill hasn't picked up his extra number one next year yet, and sure enough, here come the New Orleans Saints. Remember, I talked last segment about the connection everybody had made between them and Mark Ingram. The Heisman Trophy winner is still sitting on the board. So the Patriots make the move. They get the Saints number one next year, and you've got the New Orleans Saints with two first-round picks, and really not a bad deal. It cost the Saints a second-round pick this year as well. It gives Bill Belichick now six picks that he would have had in the first 74 had he used them all, and basically the Saints are just getting what you could say would be next year's first-round pick a year early.
Yeah, with the Falcons making a very bold move to go up and get Julio Jones, I think the Saints felt like they had to be aggressive as well, and with the running back sitting there, with the talent of Mark Ingram, I think they felt like they'd have a bell cow for the future. They had some uncertainty with Reggie Bush in free agency, and you know they haven't been able to keep that position healthy for years. Beanie Wells was a guy they were looking at the very top of their board in years past, and with a player as talented as Mark Ingram sitting there, it just made too much sense not to trade up.
Now, at 29, the Chicago Bears, we've already touched a little bit about the blundering in the front office. We'll just save that for another time, because what's really interesting is, in this case, it worked to their favor. They got the player they coveted at 26 had they completed the trade, and they didn't have to give up whatever extra draft assets they would have had to. And Gabe Kareemi, unlike the 6, 7, 8 guys before him, yes, some question marks, but probably pretty good value at this spot at 29 in the first round.
Yeah, he's a solid player that I think Mike Tice will be very pleased to coach. You know, he's got a son at Wisconsin, so I think he felt very familiar with the talent level and with the character and makeup. And, you know, they definitely need a lot of help on that offensive line, whether they decide to plug him in at left tackle and move Frank Amiali inside or even put him at guard is still to be decided. But, you know, he's a guy that's got the smarts and versatility to help the Bears' offensive line.
No, and I know in your mock draft you had Muhammad Wilkerson, the DT from Temple, penciled in at 30 to the New York Jets. That's where he went. I've heard some other, quote, draft experts jumping up and down about this pick. To me it looks like, you know, decent fit for where he went. I don't know if there's anything special. I think he could be a very good football player, but is he better value than you might expect to get at number 30?
I think this is the spot where you struggle to find that five technique position. They tend to come off the board quickly, and there just weren't many others in the draft. Wilkerson's a guy that played inside at Temple, but had the frame at 6'4", 315 to project outside in and out front. And I think he's a guy that could serve as a replacement for Trevor Price for the Jets.
Pittsburgh Steelers at 31 take Cameron Hayward out of Ohio State, the son of the former Craig Ironhead Hayward, who played for the Saints and the Bears, the late Ironhead Hayward, I should say, tragically passed away far too young. Kid who played pretty good football at Ohio State, seems with the off-the-field stuff to be very different from the old man. Is this another case of the Steelers finding a college defensive end who projects to a rush linebacker, or is he got enough natural size to stay in that five technique in a 3-4 defense?
I think they're definitely looking at him for their three-man front. He's a guy that is very solid on first and second down. I don't think they'll get a lot of him as a pass rusher. And that's the reason why the Steelers need those guys. They want to stop the run. So I think he could fit that role. And at this spot, he wasn't going to last a whole lot longer. So it made sense for the Steelers to nab him at this spot.
The final pick of the first round, the Green Bay Packers, Derek Sherrod, the big offensive tackle out of Mississippi State. Last year, it was Brian Bulaga. This is a formula we've seen. We talked about the Patriots with bookends for years to come. Is that exactly what Ted Thompson was thinking, as Chad Clifton, in spite of a Pro Bowl season last year, has shown a little wear and tear?
Yeah, I think they know they got to address that line. It's been an issue for a couple of years, and with the way Aaron Rodgers played last season, they got to find a way to keep him healthy. So I think investing in an offensive lineman just made too much sense for Ted Thompson at this spot.
Nolan, I know it has been and continues to be a very busy weekend for you. Thank you for your outstanding work, as always. We'll check in with Nolan for a little final recap next week. For now, we take a break, and then the Publisher's Pen. Welcome back, everybody. We are in the home stretch, and as we do each week, we will finish with the Publisher's Pen. I am Hub Arkush. You know, it was interesting all weekend long with the NFL College Draft. It started a little rough. The boos for Roger Goodell when he took the stage about 20 minutes before the first round commenced were overwhelming. It wasn't pleasant. It's pretty clear who at least the fans in the peanut gallery at Radio City Music Hall in New York blamed for the current labor impasse. But as the night wore on and as the weekend wore on, it was about football. It was an oasis in the middle of the desert. It was fun. It was about teams drafting football players, and it became clear that all the damage that has been done, and there has been damage done, is fixable. The question is, coming out of this weekend, how well did the NFL owners and players get the message? It is time to get a deal done. The players have won every round in court so far. They've got the leverage. It should be up to the players, not the owners now, to force their way back to the table. And guys, let's bring some sense back to the NFL. Our thanks to Randy Meyer, such a great job as always, as our producer and engineer. Syndication Network is our home studio. And most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. Hope to have you back next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.